Cliffcentral.com. Our SME feature now on the Business Masterclass. The first half hour, we spoke about HR policies and procedures with Andre Willemse from USB Ed. Get that podcast. But now we're interviewing a social entrepreneur. And I've got a, your surname is easy. Is your name Charlotte?
Shalati.
Shalati. Yes. All right. I was sort of fluctuating between those two, Shalati or Charlotte. Shalati Tefo from the center called, a center called, now, yeah, you also have to help us. Let me try. Dimponyana Tsalapeng.
Yes, lovely. You've got it.
Okay, but you say it anyway.
Dimponyana Tsalapeng.
Dimponyana Tsalapeng, which means what?
Little gifts of home.
All right. Yes. Okay, we're going to find out more about that. It's a children's home and early childhood development center in Olivenhout Bosch. And you actually took this over from your mother.
Yes.
So it runs in the family. When did she start it? Just tell us why you took over. You look like a dynamic young woman. You could be in corporate. You could be doing a lot of other things. But just take us through the start of this business, and why did you go this route?
Okay. So she started the center in 2001. She opened a preschool, and in the community that we work in, we realized there were too many social ills. So she then opened doors for a children's home. Basically told myself and my little brother that, hey, you've got siblings, you guys are sharing a room. And we're like, oh my gosh. But I then left after matric. I was in advertising for 7 years. And I remember her telling me that, you know what, you're going to school, you're going to work, after working, you need to come back and take over the center. And I was like, why would I want to do this?
Yeah.
And she said, because I've seen that out of all my children, you have a love for people and the community. So I said, okay. I went full-time last year, Feb, without a salary. And I was always hoping to not be like my mother, but I'm turning out to be like her.
We all do.
So, I mean, it's been a long journey for her. She hasn't received any government funding to run the center. She basically started income generating initiatives to look after the children.
All right. Now, just take us, before we come back to the center.
Yes.
Your background. So you say you left school.
Yes.
Did you study?
I studied advertising management.
All right. Where did you study?
At college campus.
Okay.
Yes, and then
I went into it for 7 years at least.
7 years doing activations, marketing, brand management. My last company that I worked for was last year, Jan. Yes, and they also couldn't believe that I was leaving. But it was a good experience in terms of learning certain skills that I needed to execute to kind of take the center where it needed to be. You know, it needed to grow. We needed a lot of administrative, you know, systems to have the place running, because my mom ran the center like a home, you know, like a normal mother would do. So she kind of looked past a lot of
Are you trying to take it more to a business?
Yes. Oh, definitely.
Is it an NGO or is it a business?
It's an NGO.
So it is an NGO.
Yes.
You've gone from advertising to an NGO, salary for a while.
Yeah.
And you're going to try and turn it into some kind of business with some model, some financial model.
No, definitely. I think people always think, or rather they kind of criticize people who run NPOs and NGOs to say, you know, we just take funding and we kind of do what we want to do. And it's the same thing as starting your own business. You kind of start without funding if you're passionate about it, rather. And rather use the funding to kind of upskill, you know, and develop the center to a place where you want it to be, or the NPO rather, as opposed to say, I want to run an NPO, I'm going to wait for funding. So I learned that from my mother, and that is why I was comfortable, you know, with leaving work without a salary to kind of run the center. But it was through a leadership college that Procter & Gamble does, where I realized that there were a lot of systems I needed to put in place.
Okay, well, look at that also, the Procter & Gamble influence here. This is an enterprise development story, a lovely story. But some people may not, or a lot, most people listening won't have a clue of Olivenhout Bosch.
Yes.
Just give them a bit of a context of the environment in which you run the center.
Okay.
I have a bit of a feel because I live in Centurion and I've been in there a few times.
Okay.
Just tell people about Olivenhout Bosch.
So Olivenhout Bosch, it's a fairly new township.
It's growing fast. It has grown fast.
Yeah, it's growing fast. We've got a population of plus minus 200,000 people, but almost 45% of the population are foreign nationals who do not have legal documentation. So, I mean, we are the only center servicing Olifantshoek, and we've kind of been on the receiving end of all the social ills. So you've got an issue where government doesn't acknowledge kids who are foreign nationals. So a center such as ours, we were told that we're not allowed to look after the kids and have to vacate the kids who are foreign nationals.
Xenophobia also happened in Olifantshoek?
It happened, not the last one. The last one didn't take place, but I think when the outbreak started, it did happen. So, you know, it's cases like that. We've got one clinic that's servicing that entire community. They're also denying access to children who are foreign nationals without legal documentation. So we, as a center, have kind of found ourselves, you know, in a place where we have to kind of get medical assistance for these children and also see how we can look after them without them being at the center.
So it hasn't been easy.
It's not easy at all. It's not easy at all. We have this community, you know, they're moving a township called Mooiplaas to Olifantshoek, which last year the community went on strike about for basic reasons. One, we've got a temporary police station. You know, it's very hard when even a center like us, we work with the police station, but, you know, you've got kids who have come to our center because of rape cases and the men are still walking free, you know. The kids come back to us, why are you guys not helping us with the situation? We've got a situation where the drug abuse, we've got kids who we took in because the mother is addicted to a drug called Nyaope. And when we go to the social development to say, this is a person who is not within the right mind to look after a child, why can you not intervene? They say, no, the person must come willingly. So, you know, if...
things like that. Okay.
Yeah, it's things like that that...
All right, so we're here with a... It's a social entrepreneur, and we still have to get to the entrepreneur part. Yes. Because you also got involved in the PNG Leadership College, which is their enterprise development initiative.
Sure.
And we have them in the next part of the show, Transformation Platform, about what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But like the Pick and Pay one we had a week or two ago. But just how many kids do you have in your organization and a couple of staff? Just give us a bit of a feel for your little business.
So we have 34 children we are looking after. We've got a staff of 13, 9 are full-time and the rest are part-time.
All right, and how do you sustain this financially? I mean, that's a real tough. Where's your revenue? Where's your income? You
know, we've got an early childhood development center where we have 57 learners. Out of the 57, there are 23 who don't pay. So the income that we receive from the ECD center, we channel towards the salaries of the practitioners. Mm. Then we've got a little venue rental building where we've got people who, churches rather, that rent space on Sundays. We use that money to kind of sustain in the center and look after the kids. And then we do a bit of recycling because waste management in that community is just a nightmare. You know, they removed the public bins because they found that too many babies were being dumped. And when we then asked for a plan B, they didn't have a plan B. So we created a recycle swap shop project. This is to encourage children to get used to the idea of recycling and kind of get involved in cleaning the environment. So they bring recyclable items to us. We weigh it. And when it amounts to 20 points something, they get like a food parcel or stationery packs, etc.
Richard.
So I was going to say that, I mean, we've always, we often talk about entrepreneurs and SMEs in this slot. The reality is the principles that apply in your world are no different to ours in terms of a profit organization. I mean, we were talking earlier about HR policies, procedures. I mean, you talk of a staff of 13 people. Mm. How have you managed that in terms of driving an MPO? Because clearly there you've got to manage the challenges of, let's call it, the not-for-profit thinking and approach together with all the dynamics of 13 individuals who all have their own aspirations and dreams.
Sure. I mean, we've got two types of people. We've got the staff that we've hired based on their credentials, which are the practitioners, because they obviously need to be qualified to look after the kids. However, we don't have enough money to kind of upskill them. So you find we have to find alternative ways, you know, bring in organizations that will help us upskill these people. They often come to us as, I mean, we also think of them as kind of vulnerable because these are people who live in the community. Mm-hmm. So even if they do get a salary, you kind of have to approach them as though they are one of the kids at the center. If they have psychological issues, you have to deal with them. If they've got issues where they don't have documentation, you kind of have to help them to get documentation and take them through courses to understand that it's not a charity organization. Yes, we are running it, but they are there to work and execute stuff. So we kind of find the same issue. We get lazy people. We get people who come to our office, center and expect us to understand that they woke up at 11 because there was domestic violence in the house. So it's those kind of issues that my mom could kind of not deal with because she's like a mother to them. So I had to come in and kind of be that tough person to say, no, stop being emotional. This is a business. You know, you're getting a salary. This is what needs to be done. So interventions such as that are really important. Also on the compliance part, as much as, you know, social development, you have centers like this, they have their own regulations. So they came in this year and they kind of, you know, went to all these ECD centers and said, you need business zoning, and us as well, to say, this is not compliant, you need to do this, you need to do that. So we've had to bring in a legal team, you know, service providers, just to help us to run the preschool the best way possible. But we then realized that, you know, yes, we can afford to do that, but what about the other small business owners who have been running ECD centers and NAYAs for 15, 20 years, and they kind of have to shut down their businesses because they can't afford to have it business zoned or something like that. Yeah,
it's quite interesting your philanthropic approach to those around you, which is obviously unique to your space. But it does just also beg the question once again of that whole regulatory framework, mm-hmm. and the whole, you know, why you have the policies and procedures and what you need and what, you know, I always ask the question, you know, are we defining policies and procedures and you know, the rules of the game, so to speak, just to keep a whole lot of people happy and keep a whole lot of tick a whole lot of boxes? Or is this really relevant and needed for this particular scenario that we find ourselves in? You know, is it critical for business zoning for the safety of the children, or is that just because somebody wants it to be zoned for a zoning reason, which would be what, I don't know, but, you know, so which one is it? Is this, let's call it beneficial, frameworks
can
or
I
not?
Jump in here? That sounds like a rhetorical question. Look, I think it's government being government. Mm. I mean, I must compliment you, Shalate, because early on when you first began this conversation, it seemed to me that you're operating in a space where government is not enabling you to do what you're trying to do. In actual fact, you're being forced to break the so-called law. Mm. Okay? But from a moral standpoint, you know, society needs what you're doing. So, I mean, I just want to be bold and nominate, you know, Shalate as the Cliff Central Person of the Year. I don't know if we have anything.
We don't have any. We'll create it.
But we'll create it just for you. And look, I think if any corporates are listening to this conversation, I mean, we need to, you know, put those people to task and say, here's someone who's doing good in society and she needs all the support that she can get. So, Charlotte, if someone is listening, a big corporate, what is it that you say you need right now?
I think more than anything, we're looking into skills development. They're kids that we've looked after and they're older now. Mm-hmm. And the schools that we work with in the community, they cannot afford to take the kids to further their education. So we're having to kind of create a curriculum at our center just to offer basic skills, you know, and try and link in corporates to say, here are learners, here's a center. We can kind of demarcate it, make it a little work readiness program hubs situation where, you know, kids are acquiring certain skills here at the center, but you can recruit them, you know, to come and work for you. One. Two is really to help, I think, the ECD centers that are being shut down, you know, because they're taking the grade R class to the primary schools thinking they're resolving the case of ECD centers, but it doesn't work because if you're taking a grade R student to a primary school ends at 1:30, 1:00. What is the child doing till the parent comes at 6:00? Where at the ECD center, the kids were being fetched at 6:30, you know, this is just kind of concerning for us because we're seeing kids just walking around now who have been removed from these ECD centers that have been shut down because of these regulations.
So for your center, if someone is listening and has got big money, what is it that you need in this regard? Do you have a channel through which that help could come through to you?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, we've partnered with a lot of the organizations in the community.
Okay.
So whether people need help with refurbishing and kind of zoning the area, the center, we've got, you know, manpower. We've got people who can do it. We just need the funds to kind of help these centers as well. Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get her details later on.
Yeah, let me just say that she has been selected to participate in the 2016 Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders. I don't know, you can tell us in a moment what it's about. We have an SME outside who wants to ask a question and pitch her business. Sure. But that is interesting. So, you know, she's being selected because
she's the Cliff Central Person of the Year.
All right, we have an SME who's going to position the business and her business for 30 seconds and then engage the panel.
Hi there. Firstly, I'd just like to say that what you're doing is amazing and it's touching.
Thank you.
I hope everything works out for you.
Thank you.
And then following that, I'm going to do my pitch for my business. My name is Brigitte Mitchell and I'm the operations manager and co-owner of Ribs, Wings and Things, or for short, RWT Foods. The first choice for anyone with a palate for homemade comfort and convenience food. There's always a time when we crave sticky finger licking pork ribs or chicken wings, and ours is served with hand cut potato chips with the skin on end, tangy made from scratch dressing and dips. We have our authentic hole in the wall takeaway spot on Fox Street, Maboneng, serving straight up street food all week, as well as our catering options, platters and home delivered family meals. We also supply the new bustling innovative food, coffee, clothing, beauty care store in Soweto, the box shop on Vilakazi.
Ah.
If you love feeling like you've just eaten a sumptuous lip-smacking meal, as well as feeling satisfied as our portions are great value for money, then visit us at 274 Fox Street in Maboneng or email info@ribs-wings-and-things-and-the-word.co.za for all your catering, pop-up, braai, market, or larger platter needs. And of course, come and check out the box shop.
Okay.
Visit our Facebook page at RWT Foods and catch us on Instagram at Ribs, Wings, and Things.
All right, Brigitte, that's it. Stay there. Comments on Andre, what do you think about her pitch? It's a bit, I think it probably went over 30 seconds, but it's quite detailed.
Yeah, I was busy smelling.
We've got some examples, some samples here, which is getting to the panel.
I think you summed it up quite well in a nutshell. It was a bit of a distraction with your food moving around you on the table.
That's fine. It wasn't for us, the pitching. You know? Yeah. So, all right. So, any other comments on the pitch? And do you have a question for us?
I have a question for...
Okay, let's first see if she's got it. Do you have a question or a comment for the panel?
The comment is just that I wanted to say how fantastic what this woman is doing.
Okay.
For her community.
Let's go for it.
Yeah, ribs, wings and things. What inspired that? Why the wings? Why the ribs? I mean, I want my rump steak, you know?
Well, firstly, I've got a partner in the business, and he's crazy about wings and crazy about ribs. And I'm crazy about cooking and street food. We've traveled all over the world and we just sort of eat off the streets and we really like that, you know, that type of thing. And we love seeing it at the markets in South Africa, and Johannesburg especially is getting this, you know, newfound, what do you call it? Everybody wants to eat off the street or, you know, what you're making. You know, it's interesting. And that's what inspired us to do it. And for me, I'd love cooking.
Okay.
I'll do anything to cook.
Okay, any excuse to cook.
Yeah.
All right, Brigitte, thank you so much. We'll
thank you.
I'm sure we'll have a taste of that food here in the studio.
Thank you. I hope you enjoy. Mm.
Thank you.
Right, what is this fellowship? What is this 2016 Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders? Tell us a little bit about that, Shalati Tefo.
Okay. So I actually got the information from a friend of mine who attended the fellowship program in 2014. He's currently creating an arts college for SA. And he had said, go apply. And I was like, what is it about? He said, no, I think you're the best candidate for this thing. So I went and applied, but I found myself being challenged or kind of, you know, motivated to say, yes, we have Dimponya Natsalapeng and Olive and Houtbosch, but would this kind of service, holistic service, you know, benefit other communities? So I then pitched to them, you know, to say, this is what we're doing and we want to move, you know, into other communities where we have an ECD, a children's home, skills development, you know, just a holistic approach. And I then got selected and I will be going next month. Basically to I'm under the civic leadership program. Nice. So they're going to give me all the necessary training to kind of know how to run multiple centers at a time, and also I think give up an opportunity for me to engage with potential sponsors, you know, which I'm really hoping for.
How long are you going to Washington for?
I am going for 2 months.
Okay. Is it an extensive program then?
It is. It's a morning 9 to 5 kind of program. Apparently, it's quite intense. It's an actual training that they take you through, workshops, presentations, events that you attend to engage with people who are kind of doing what you're doing or kind of in a position to finance what you're doing. So I think more than anything, I want to see Dimponya Natsalapeng centers and communities because I've seen the benefit of it.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, deserving.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. So very quickly, PNG has a leadership college as part of the enterprise development. How did you get in there?
I got in through a referral from a friend of mine, actually, who does some work with PNG, and he introduced me to a lady named Kulu, who then asked if I was interested in attending this college and that it would be beneficial, you know, because I did raise kind of the concerns that I had seen and experienced at the center. So I think it is the best kind of starting point for someone who wants to start a business, educated or not, but it kind of gives you the right skills, and they structure the sessions in such a way that they tailor-make it to your need. So it's not just a generic training. They assess your center, what it's lacking, and they kind of give you a program to deal with those issues.
All right, we'll find out more about that program in the next half-hour transformation platform. But has it benefited you?
Oh, definitely.
So it's helped you see the business element?
Definitely. I think even the confidence to apply for the Mandela Washington program came from that, you know, to say I don't have to think about it just for Olive and Houtbosch and kind of get drained with all the issues.
Think bigger. Think global.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
That's what the training, I don't know if they can teach you in Washington to do it any better, frankly, but going there, networking and finding money and finding sponsors. Then is what I would focus on if I was you.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and then act like they're teaching you something. Be humble, but in essence, I think you can teach them a lot. Sure. All right, we have another pitch from the floor, an SME. Pitch your business for 30 seconds and engage the panel. Go for it.
Hi all. First of all, I'd like to commend Shaletta on what she's doing. It's brave for you to do something especially in the space that you're in. My name is Chieta. I run a small business. The name of the company is Tenshi Consulting. We offer accounting and financial management services. Our expertise is in communicating financial information to our clients to give them the confidence to make well-informed and sound business decisions. Thank you.
And we can get you where?
We're on Facebook, Tenshi Consulting. We're also on Twitter, Tenshi_consult.
All right, you have a question for the panel. I mean, we've got very equipped people here, HR, finance. Any comments about the first half hour, anything?
I think my question would be with regards to policies in HR, particularly with what we do. Most of our work is on the road. We have to visit clients a lot, and my biggest concern is always safety of the employees and what I need to do as a small business.
I think that picks up very nicely with the very first comment that I made about SME that has salespeople on the road. So one of the things that you would look at there is just in terms of everything that could be potentially a risk, to your business in the sense of accidents and on the like, but it also, there's implications for cars and travel allowances and et cetera, et cetera. So I think just be very clear with, in terms of your policy, in terms of what is it that you, what are you willing to give? What are you willing to spend? In terms of travel, cars, and allowances, and that sort of thing, and document it, and communicate it, and communicate it well, and get buy-in. That's very important.
Okay, Richard, any comments there? I mean, your whole game is about what she's doing.
Yeah, I was going to say one of the, and I know exactly where you're at in terms of the challenges of having your employee base all over the show, and you know, there are different clients, different times. You're trying to understand what's happening where, and yeah, I think, you know, I go back to the point of, you know, policies and procedures are critical. Making sure that everybody understands them is the most important part, because you can have as many pieces of paper as you like, but if they don't really buy into them, if they don't feel consulted, and particularly in that space, you've got professionals that you're working with, they're skilled, they know what they're doing, and unfortunately in that space, sometimes because we're skilled and competent in many things, we think we're skilled and competent in all things, and then we take the shortcut on a particular issue and then only discover that that can be a problem. So sometimes getting people in that space to be compliant with policies and procedures can sometimes be a little bit of a challenge. So they need to understand why they're doing something or why you're asking for something. And generally, if they understand that, then they tend to be a little bit more compliant. So answer the why as opposed to the what.
Yes. and sorry. Get your employees to... Get your employees to make sure that they understand what you're trying to get at, because very often you find that they, when you don't have a policy, then you have, you know, every single employee in your office asking, can I drive, can I not drive, how much, what is the rate per kilometer, etc., etc. And if it's always good to refer people back to your policy first before you start taking questions, because you're working with clever people. They can read and understand, so get them, and then if they don't understand, let them come to you and say, all right, now, you know, how does this work in further detail? It's also a good idea when you get feedback from your employees to actually work that back into your policy, because, you know, those guys are out there on the road all the time. They know that they hear and they see maybe a bit more than you do, so listen with an active ear.
Mm. All right, thank you so much, Shalati. I mean, you're inspirational. Just, how's your mom going to run the business for 2 months while you're gone? Have you trained her well?
Is she ready for this challenge?
She wakes me up at 4 a.m. every day. She's like, you're leaving, let's work. So that's what's happening.
So the policies and procedures now in your house are quickly, because there's lots to catch up on.
She's going crazy.
So you've been there how long now since you left the advertising industry?
It's about a year and 2 months.
And be honest, has it been easy? Do you look back sometimes and think, gee, did I do the right thing?
I mean, I'd love to have a salary at the end of the month, but I go to bed at night knowing I've done something good.
Mm. Are you heading towards a salary? I mean, that model must be...
Oh, yes. That's definitely what I'm trying to get out of the Procter & Gamble Leadership Academy and my program next month. I need to live. I need to get inspired to do more, you know. So more than anything, I've just had to humble myself, because I love this work, and you kind of need to do that before you see the results.
And you sometimes think, curse my mom for her genes. The fact that I had to adopt, that became part of me.
Yeah, no.
No, like, that's great.
Yeah.
Our society, that's the challenge, gentlemen, is our society needs this more. These are the real needs. We need to find a financial model to make your business work.
Yeah. Mm.
And yet, I don't know, you know, we've got these bureaucratic issues that can stop you from really succeeding in a community that needs it, really needs it. And you made the point there as well, Alice. So we wish you well. Any other final comments for our special guest?
No, just thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you.
All the best.
Thanks.
Alice, you saw there when you asked what you need. I mean, the first thing wasn't money. I want money. You kind of had to drag it out of her, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I still didn't get it, but yeah.
Like, we need skills development, and we need to look after the people.
Yeah.
Hold on.
I thought she would say like 5 million. Okay. Here we go. But it's okay. We know she needs all the support she can get.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Which amounts to money at the end of the day.
So all the patriots listening in, please help.
You know, it's a good thing. There's a Kira, big private Kira school just down the road from you guys. I know those guys are very interested in getting into partnerships with, particularly because I know that they've got community development programs, and they've got a very strong CSI program. Is to partner with schools in the community to help, because I guess at the end of the day you want to get to a point where you have a blueprint.
Oh, yes.
That you can go and replicate a business plan, a blueprint. I mean, that's what you want, isn't it?
Yeah.
So just a contact detail for where you are. It is called the Dimponyana Tsalapeng Center. But just slowly, if there is this one person with deep pockets or with a kind heart who wants to get to you, what's the contact detail?
Okay. You can contact myself, Shalati, on 073-540-9922. That's 073-540-9922. 540-9922, and we are situated at plot 55 on R55 road.
Are you on that main road there?
Yes, we're on the main road.
All right, thank you so much for joining us today. That was great having you in the studio.
Thank you so much.
Next up, our transformation platform. We look at the PNG Leadership College, and we've got our two special guests that will tell us about that. A couple of weeks ago, we had Ackerman Lady, one of the daughters of Raymond Ackerman, who runs their transformation initiatives inside the whole group, and they also have a wonderful thing going, and this seems like the same sort of program which our country really needs. So stay with us for the transformation platform. CliffCentral.com.